Our guest is Marie Esnault, and her call sign currently is KF4FGN, but she's soon to get another call, which was her late husband's call. But Marie, I want to welcome you aboard and thank you for joining us here on QSO. And you've got a real unusual story to tell, so I want to. The thing of it is, there's no other way to say this other than the fact that Marie just got the general class license, just passed the general class, and the unusual thing is she's 82 years old. And I am so impressed. And so I want you to tell me a little bit about your background. Tell me a little bit of your story.
Okay, well, my husband was a ham from the time he was 13 years old, and he lived in New Orleans, and he used to have to ride the bus to school. And he said he'll never forget, he was on the bus, and a boy came on with an oatmeal box, and it was a radio. And he says he pestered him until he got a radio in an oatmeal box. But needless to say, by the time he was 13, he was already past the general corps. He was an amateur radio operator. So then he went to school, and he'd go to night school and passed all his tests. And this man, the teacher says, Richard, someone's going to call you. And I think he's going to offer you a job. Well, this man called my husband, and my husband told my son that on his 18th birthday, he was on a troop train going to San Francisco to work for Pan American. And my son says, oh, I couldn't handle that. But he had all his licenses, and Pan American hired him. And then he, about 3 months later, the whole crew, the ones that were radio operators and the ones that fixed the planes, were told to go down the street to the Navy and get sworn in. So he got sworn into the Navy, and he was in the South Pacific. And that's how he started in amateur radio. And so then he... After the war, he went to Brownsville, Texas, and from there he went to Miami. That's where he met me because I had moved down there with my family. I don't know, you want me to just keep going?
Yo, absolutely. Well, tell me something. How did you guys meet? In other words, he was in service and you were living in the same town.
He was out then. When he went to Miami, he was out. He was out of the service, but working for Pan American as a radio operator.
Okay, now tell me, what exactly did he do with Pan American? Did he fly aboard a plane, or was he...
All those the big seaplanes out in the South Pacific, because the government had no way to keep all this fleet flying, except for the Pan American crews.
Okay, so, but was he...
He was a radio operator.
But was he aboard plane or was he on the ground?
On the plane.
He was flying. He was a radio operator on board on the plane.
Yes.
Very interesting. I bet he would have had some very interesting stories to tell.
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, it really was.
So, but now let me ask you this. What were the circumstances of you meeting him? How did that happen?
Well, when I came to Miami... I went to work for a bank, and when I was at the bank, we had parties and like that, and we'd meet on the beach every Saturday, and he came up and asked me out, and we'd go to the Y dancing and like that. That's how I met him.
So you met through the bank. Now, did you know anything about ham radio back then?
Oh, no. I did hear of it once, but that's about all.
So then how did he go about winning you over and still had this ham radio hobby. Now, see, we've got a lot of young people out there listening, the people that are just getting into the hobby. And there's always that block. You know, once you overcome it, you know, the spouse begins to fall in love with the hobby, too. But at first, sometimes there's some adverse reaction. I mean, you're going to bring one of that contraption in the house? Why do we have to have that thing over the roof of the house and all these wires? And
oh, so I always enjoyed it very much. The only time I didn't like it is when the neighbors would call up, say, like at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and I knew what it was. You know what it was, too.
Well,
and so, and then I'd say, no, I'm not answering that. You are.
Well, you know, sometimes.
The last time, though, it was really funny. You know, the FCC came out and told our neighbor that, I'm sorry, but you don't have a good TV, and that's what's causing this, because he's got a TV in his house working, and yours is not. So we remember seeing the man walk out with his TV and come in with a new TV.
Oh, my goodness. that's at least a good story. I mean, you know, but, you know, a lot of times that happened. That happens even today. Where hams are operating and the neighbors have got some equipment that isn't exactly very good. And that's what happens. But then there's sometimes when hams are getting blamed for interference when they're not even doing it. You know, I mean,
I know.
When I was a kid, I had left home and I went to Texas with a church group to visit a college. And I lived in Detroit. And while I was gone, away from home, a group of the neighbors came and pounded on the door and demanded that my mom tell me to turn my radio off because they were trying to watch television and could not.
Okay.
And I wasn't even there.
There.
But what the culprit was a CB operator, Citizens Band guy, who lived about a block. Not even a block, about a half a block from me, who had a big beam antenna on the house, and he was running one of those sweep tube linear amplifiers, and that thing was just nasty, and he was getting into everything. I mean everything. But they thought, you know, I had call letters, but this guy used the CB handle of Kingfish. And they came over and said, well, we know this is your son because we can hear him. He's the Kingfish. And she said, no, sorry, my son is a ham operator. He's not the Kingfish. But you couldn't tell them. They believed what they believed. You know, they knew.
Isn't that funny?
You know, I had the antenna on the roof. I was guilty, even though I wasn't even home. And they thought they were absolutely certain she was lying about it. You know, that.
Oh, this is funny.
So anyhow. I know what that's like when the neighbors come knocking on the door. That's just, you know. And the funny thing about it is most hams are able to help the neighbor get rid of their TV interference if it's possible. You know, the ham knows how to do that. So
exactly.
So you folks met and you went out a few times. And what happened then? What was the next?
Oh, well, I think we went together for over a year, and then we finally got married in 1949.
And at that point, you were...
Well, anyway, at that point, my husband was looking for another job, and he went to work for Philco as a tech rep. I don't know if you know about tech reps. But anyway, so we went to, our first assignment was Spokane, Washington. And every afternoon at about 4 or 5 o'clock when he came home from work, he would call. We were in an apartment house with a long wire. He'd call this colonel from Barksdale Air Force Base would call him, and they'd talk every afternoon. Finally, one day, the colonel says, "Esnault, what are you doing there?" And Dick told him what he was doing, and the colonel says, "You know, we need you a hell of a lot more than they do." And we heard in a week or so that the colonel went to Omaha and demanded that my husband be sent to Barksdale if he wanted. And so we did. We went to Barksdale. And he was on a, it was a top secret program, and he was on it for 5 years. So anyway, that's how we, and then
it was top secret at that point in time, but today would you be permitted to say what it was he was doing, or is that still?
Well, I'm still not saying what he did, but I didn't say what he did. I said it was a top secret project.
Well, you know, when somebody says it's a top secret project, everybody moves up on the edge of their seat and says, ooh, what could it have been, you know?
Yeah.
And so you think, well, maybe there's enough time has gone by now. Maybe it's not a secret anymore. So that's why I thought I would ask. But there's some things that will remain a secret forever. So, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't. But anyway, so then we were there for 5 years. And then we went back to Florida where my family was. And we were there for 5 years. And it was a type of a job that if the he was very close with the wing, and if the wing went to Africa, he went to Africa with them. And so anyway, we were there for about 5 years, and then we got sent to California, to Palo Alto, and Dick went to an amateur radio meeting. There was a lot of Philco and Lockheed people there. And this one afternoon after this meeting, radio meeting, this man came over our house, and he said, talk to Dick, and he said, you know, would you help me? I want to put up a civilian satellite. And he talked to Dick for about an hour or more. And then Dick says, well, if I can help you, I will. And he left. And my husband said to me, I think the guy's got rocks in his head, but if I can help him, I will. Because how are four or six hams going to put up a civilian satellite?
Well, now,
was
that civilian? I was going to say, was that civilian satellite, was it intended for ham radio or for something else?
A civilian. Oh, it was for ham radio only. It was Project Oscar.
So he was right in. He was on the ground floor.
Project Oscar. Yeah.
Project Oscar. That's amazing. So how did that? I mean, how did that go? Tell me a little bit of how that project developed.
Oh well, it was. So they worked a lot on it. And my husband was in the one that went all over begging and borrowing to get the equipment that they needed to build this thing. And so anyway, what happened is they all were working on it, and even on the weekends and everything. And so he said one day, Gabriel, well, I better not get ahead of my story.
You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN, right after this. If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. This antenna features a specially designed lighter weight stand, and its unique slot design eliminates the need for a controller box and cable. The exact same performance
as the famous TW2010 Adventurer. If you've heard you can't take it with you when you go, don't believe it. The Transworld TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. All other shipping will be through U.S. Postal Service at actual cost. Go to the website, take a look at the Transworld TW2010L Backpacker Antenna at transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
We now rejoin our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN.
Edward R. Murrow heard about it. You remember him as a radio commentator.
Very much so. Very prominent.
And he said to, and he told President Kennedy, he says, you know, there's about six or seven hams out there, and they're all trying to get up a civilian satellite. And Kennedy was supposed to have kicked the chair across the room and says, that's what we're looking for, civilian use of amateur radio. And so from then on, it went. My husband didn't think it would ever go, but it went. And so on Saturday and Sunday, they had to have it tested and all kinds of stuff. Philco donated for it, and all these different places donated stuff. And so, anyway, one night we all went down to El Camino, and Gabriel Heater came on, and he says, CQ, CQ, all you amateur radios, there's something in space for you tonight. And that's when Oscar went up. And they had 5,000 people that sent in messages that they heard it. And so then after that, the ARRL came in and gave money for stamps and things like that. So that's how they got it up.
Now, when you said, see, I didn't understand there for a minute. When you said that when President Kennedy found out about this, that he kicked the chair. But that wasn't because he was angry. It was because he was...
He was thinking that was something good for us, that we could say a peaceful use of space.
You know, and that's amazing. Here's the President of the United States getting all excited about this. In other words, he was obviously...
When Edward R. Murrow told him about it, we were going back. Then it was a Cuban Missile Crisis, and we were going back to... We were going to Massachusetts because... He was put on a secret security. I don't know what you'd call
clearance,
it.
Clearance assignment or
a top secret. Well, it was a secret assignment because of the Cuban Missile Strike.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to Massachusetts, and that's where we went. And let's see, I'm forgetting now some of the.
That's all right. It'll come back to you in a minute, and then when it does, then I'll forget what I'm talking about.
I know. But anyway, so we went into we stayed there for about a year, and then after that, Dick changed. He went to work for a colonel he used to work for, and that was. And we went back to Georgia. And then we got to how we got to Alabama. He was coming here so much because there was so much business because of the space thing that we came. We moved here, and about 2 years later, my husband went into business for himself, and we had our own business, and it's still running. Two of our boys are in it, and. There was all four of them for used to be in it, but now it's just two that are really running it.
Well, now what kind of business is it?
Manufacturers rep business. We represent different companies in four states. That's how we know Martin Jew.
I see. Well, that's...
Plus, we called on him as a customer, see?
Well, now...
He knows my husband real well.
Well, let me ask you this now. Do you recall the day of the launch when the rocket blasted off and it was carrying the satellite and the satellite got released into space? Do you remember that day very well, or can you recall that?
When Oscar went up...
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was in 62, I think. It was in the 60s. You know, it was in the Space Museum, too, in Smithsonian. Because we saw it, and I have pictures of my kids around it, but I don't know where they are, where it is now. But somebody said they heard it, that it's still there.
Oh, that's amazing. So... When this satellite got up in the air, it got aloft, and you said they announced to the amateurs that there was something up there in space now for them.
They said, CQU hams, there's something in space for you tonight.
Did your husband get to work the Oscar satellite very much once it was up in space? Did he participate?
He worked it, but I can't say that he worked it very much. But we had, I think they had 5,000 people answer their call, you know. And so eventually Foothill College took it over. But the ARL gave us money for stamps because here's all these, about six hams dipping in their pockets all the time to do these calls. So then the ARL helped them.
Well, you know, frequently this happens, and I observe this an awful lot now with 2 meter and other repeaters in areas and markets, and that is, you know, a lot of times, you know, folks think that some of this stuff is a group effort, and some of it is, but sometimes it's not a very big group. So these guys are really making some sacrifices out of pocket. So these guys they made a lot of sacrifices out of their own pocket and time and energy to get that Oscar set.
There's a picture of, I think it's five or six of them, and they were in the Parade magazine section of Sunday paper, and it's showed, and Herbert Hoover Jr. was with them in this picture.
Now, what was your husband's call sign?
W4IJC.
W4IJC, and you're saying now you've applied, you're going to get that call sign.
Yeah, because it's a good call. International Junk Company or International, I like it. And here's you know, my husband's picture is in the ARRL handbook of 1995 on page 2.6, and it says Dick Esnault, W4I, member of the original Project Oscar team, looks over the model of the Phase 3 satellite. I don't know if you have that book, but if you do, you'll see his picture.
I might have that handbook. I don't know. I've got a collection of QSTs that takes up like three bookcases here. And
well, it's a 95 book.
I bet it's probably in QST as well in some issue. I'll have to nose around. Look, I don't have every issue, but we've got about three bookcases full, and I've had people say, when are you going to get rid of all those magazines? And I say, never. Why would I want to get rid of these old magazines? There's good stuff in there. Man, I'm telling you what, you can pull one of these old QSTs out from, I just ordered a handbook from 1951 just to have it, and I saw one on eBay the other day from 1946, but I missed it. I didn't win it. Somebody else did. That's okay. They probably, I always look for things like that because it's just a lot of fun. So after being involved in the ground floor planning and execution of the Oscar satellite, what, you know, you kind of wonder what makes somebody like that tick. What was What was your husband's favorite mode of operation as far as ham radio is concerned? What did he enjoy the most?
Who, my husband?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this sounds like someone's trying to get the phone. I hear it beeping.
Okay.
That's not your phone, is it?
No, that's not my phone. Do you want me to, you want me to hold on here while you get the call and you can come back?
No, it's all right. It's all right.
What did he enjoy the most about ham radio?
I can think of going across the country.
You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN, right after this. Something new from Trans World Antennas, it's the 4040. It's a new 40-meter monoband antenna. It looks just like the Adventurer or the TW2010. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installation where you gotta go stealth. The 4040 switching array box covers the entire 40-meter band, 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz, without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Just attach the feed line and you're ready to talk. That's the Trans World Adventurer 4040. Go to their website. Take a look. Transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. You're familiar with the TW2010 and the Trans World Adventurer. Of course, they're the same antenna. Now, the new Adventurer 4040. 40-meter monoband antenna. Complete switching all the way through the entire band. You sit in your living room. You sit in your den with your radio. And you have the stealth antenna that has made the 2010 Transworld Adventurer so famous. Check it out on the website, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you forget that, just go to our website here at QSO, tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. We now rejoin our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN.
When we went across the country, every town we went to, there was someone we knew that he had. Oh, and I'll tell you another funny thing about ham radio. I found my relatives in Germany. This is completely different. And they couldn't talk English, so they called this doctor of the village. He was a PhD with BASF. They called him over to help translate. And when he came over, my husband said to him right away, "How come you speak with American dialect and not a British dialect?" And he says, "Because I'm DK4EF or whatever." And my husband said, "W4IJC." And they started hugging each other. And my cousin was just amazed. He didn't know why they knew each other. I thought that's a cute story, too.
Well, I remember when I was younger, traveling, like you said, traveling across the country. And in every city, it seemed like I knew someone.
That's right.
And at that time, you would always get an invite. Oh, you got to come over. You got to come over and have dinner.
I mean, it was something. Oh, and then, I had a class reunion, and my husband went with me to my class reunion in New Jersey. And one friend I met lives in Kentucky, and I had won a painting at the class reunion, and so she took it home to her house. So we went up there to pick it up, and Dick was talking on a handheld in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, he was talking to these hams, and he said that he was with Project Oscar, and we were going to visit this girl and all like that. So this guy says, "You know, we'd like to meet you." And so, anyway, they made that they'd meet at a certain place, and they said, "The people you're visiting, they'll know where it is." So when we went to visit my girlfriend, I said, "Do you know where this place is? There's a couple of guys want to meet Dick." So she says, sure. So her and her husband went with us, and they were, when we got there, there was 50 people there.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, being involved with the first Oscar satellite would make any amateur radio operator a celebrity in the ranks.
And now the Huntsville made tapes of my husband when he would tell the story like I was. They made tapes of it. And I'm sure they haven't. In fact, they gave him one or two, but I haven't found them. I moved about 2 years ago, and I guess I'm slow. I haven't sold the other house, and I guess I'm just slow getting stuff together. But I know I have a tape somewhere that he made, but I haven't come across it.
Well, if you come across that tape, you're going to
want it.
I don't want it, but I would sure like to get a copy of it. Or I'd be happy to copy it from tape to CD for you, and then we could run his story on the radio show, which I think would be
a real
good thing.
Okay, well, if I find it, I'll do that.
Now, when you decided to go ahead and get a ham license, tell me a little bit about that and what your husband thought about all that. How did you go about doing it?
I started learning it because my one son decided he was going to do it. And, well, he saw me trying to do it, and he thought, if my mother's doing it, I think I can. So he went for it, too, and I went for it at the same time. Now, I went to radio school with my youngest son, and nobody in the class passed it, but these things happen. And but the next person I met, he taught the class, and everybody in his class. So some teachers are better than others. That's what it gets down to. So anyway, I decided I wanted to see if I could pass that test. So Bob passed his, and then I went ahead and I passed mine. And my husband was he was tickled pink when I got that, passed that test. And we're saying now that he had Alzheimer's and he passed away, we're saying that Dad would be doing a jig in the casket. He'd be so happy that I passed that general course.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And I don't think that, I guess the way, I don't know. I don't like to get into religious beliefs and all that kind of stuff. But I personally believe that we continue after we die. I believe that. And I think that he probably does know. And he probably is extremely happy, elated over that.
Right. And Martin June knew him too, and he would. He knew me too, and I mean, he got a kick out of me getting this.
Well, I'll tell you something, and let's talk about Martin Jew just for a minute. You say that you folks met him, or your husband met him, through the business that you folks were in.
Right, that's exactly right.
And did he use some sort of product that you folks made, or was it...
That we sold, yes.
Can I ask what that was, or is that...
It was a solder machine.
Aha! Uh-huh. Well, I can see how Martin Jew could use a solder machine for sure.
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
The reason why I ask is of all the folks I have met in amateur radio, especially folks that are in manufacturing and are involved.
Now, we don't manufacture that. We work for people that manufacture it.
Well, what I was saying is all the folks that I've met in ham radio that manufacture things, and Martin Jew does. He makes a lot of stuff. You know, he has... matter of fact, I bought and used one of, I guess it was his first project, and that was that little bitty CW filter that he made. And I talked to him about that, and he kind of was like, well, that really wasn't nothing. You know, but that, I remember when I first got that little CW filter and I installed it, I had a transceiver, and I went in and I hooked it up so that it was in the audio chain, and I was so impressed. I mean, I could turn that thing on. and I could copy CW Boy. You had to get it down so narrow, you know, and it just worked really well for, and it didn't cost anything. I think they sold for like maybe $19 or something like that.
Oh, that was reasonable. Yeah.
You know, it seems like that's what it was. I could have been wrong, but regardless, it worked really, really well.
And now, Bob, of course, does it for me, and he bought an antenna from him and something else, but I don't. It's upstairs, and I have it upstairs. I could read it off to you.
Well, anyways, what I was going to say is they don't come any nicer than Martin Jew. I've sat down and done a couple of interviews with him, and to understand how he started his company and how he has built it and what he's become today. You know, MFJ is a household word. You know, I mean, if you got a ham rig in the house, you've probably got two or three other MFJ things, toys, you know, switches, antenna analyzers, something. You've got an MFJ something. So he's really, and to meet and talk to the man, when you hear his story, when he tells you, you know, how he got into it, and he's a very slow-talking, gentlemanly sort of person, extremely humble. I mean, this guy...
Very nice guy.
You couldn't ask to meet a nicer person, so you all keep good company.
He likes this... Huntsville is a good town for amateur radio. He says that it's one of the best shows that in the United States.
Well, this last year, we came to the Huntsville Ham Fest. Of course, I'd been to the Huntsville Ham Fest a number of times, but this year we came and we did a live broadcast from there.
Oh, did you really?
And we were right in between the ARRL booth and the Vibroplex people. And we were set up there, and we were live on two shortwave stations. So
we took Martin to lunch on Sunday.
Well, we had a chance to sit down and talk with him some, and I was just really impressed. What a good fella!
Were you surprised at how big the show is here?
No, because I had been a couple of years, and of course I knew what Huntsville was, but I'll tell you. As Hamfest goes, and I guess maybe I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. I like Huntsville. I really like the Huntsville Hamfest,
and everybody likes it.
And I
really
think there's two reasons why. Number one, it's not overwhelmingly huge. You know, it's big, and it's big enough to attract all the main manufacturers. It's big enough to where all the things that you might be looking for, you're going to find it at Huntsville. But it's
right.
Not so big that you just walk your legs off and you still haven't seen the whole thing, if that
right.
makes any sense. You
well,
know, so.
I think really and truly, I think the last 4 or 5 years, it's smaller than it used to be.
Really? Well, see, I guess I wasn't looking at it from that perspective. But we were dealing with Charlie, and what's Charlie's last name? I can't think. He was kind of the acting public relations guy.
Oh, I don't know who it is.
And what a nice fella. We had a lot of fun. We really had a lot of fun. And it's a good ham fest. I would highly recommend to everyone to put Huntsville on
Martin
the
Martin told me it's one of his favorites.
Well, it must be because, you know, I went to go get an interview with him, and I could never find him at his booth.
He's always out visiting.
He's out visiting with folks, yeah. He's going up and down that flea market. Now, there's a ham at heart, you know, so. Well, now, okay, you got your, you went in and you got your first license, which was the technician license.
Right.
And
my husband was alive then.
So then you got to talk to him at least on 2 meters and whatnot. And
he got a kick out of me getting that license. But let's face it, it was better when I got the general corps. It's just much better.
Well, yeah, because you can operate on the low bands. And I understand now, from what I understand, is you operate quite a little bit on 20 meters.
Yes.
Now, is that your favorite amateur band?
I think so, yeah.
You think so at this point. Well, what do you enjoy the most about it? You know, you get on the ham radio and you get to to talking to people.
Well, the way I'm looking at it, it's a good hobby for me because maybe I won't be able to get around so well, and then I can still talk on the radio. That's what I figured out.
Well, you know, it's let me ask this question now, because we've got a lot of folks listening, folks that have toyed with the idea of getting their general class license, and some haven't followed through on it yet. You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN, right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. And, you know, we talk about it, and we tell you, we say, if you want a stealth antenna that can hide in your backyard, if you want something portable that you can take with you, but you don't want to sacrifice performance with a portable antenna system, we tell you this is the antenna. But you know what? You probably don't believe me. So here's what I suggest you do. If you've been thinking about the 2010, if you have need of a portable antenna, especially during emergency operations, if you participate in emergencies and you need something you can set up quickly and reliably and get on the air, go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. Don't even listen to what we're telling you. Don't pay any attention to what I say. Just go to EHAM and read the reviews. If you're thinking about a portable antenna, if you want something you can take with you on vacation, something that's attractive, that doesn't look like a bunch of poles sticking in 16 different directions, or a fishing pole hung over a tree limb or something, if you want something professional looking, something that's neat, easy, simple, but yet still performs, this is the antenna for you. Now, once again, don't take our word for it. Go to transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. Go to that site, read what's up there, and then check out the reviews, see what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. We now rejoin our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN. We now rejoin our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN. How did you find the exam? Did you find studying for the exam and passing it did you feel it was extremely difficult?
No. Well, you got to remember, I was married 58 years, and I heard a lot of ham radio in that time. And so that helped, I'm sure. But how I learned it was from the computer.
Okay.
QRZ.
So you went up to QRZ.
I would get that on, and I think it took me about 2 months studying, and I wasn't studying constantly, and I passed it. I my son came home from a trip sailing, and it was a Friday, and I said, that's when they have their meetings, and I said to Bob, I said, you know, would you take me to see if I can pass that test? And he says, yeah, come on, Mom, let's go. So we went, and I passed it. And, oh, this is funny. My oldest son, he came home and he said to my oldest son, he says, Mom passed the test. And my oldest son jumped up and down screaming, oh, my God, she passed that test. I'll never do that. How did she do that? He was really upset that I passed that test.
Well, you see, and you're a shining example of this, because there's a lot of folks out there that believe that the test is too difficult to take, that they couldn't pass it.
I had no, I mean, I thought I'd have to take it two times. I took it the first time and I passed it.
Well, the other thing too, and I don't want to beleaguer the point of bringing this up, but there's people that are in their 50s and 60s, and I've heard them say, oh, I'm too old to pass that test.
Well, you got to let them meet me then.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because you passed it, and you said it wasn't too bad at all.
You have to study it, that's for sure, and I did, and I passed it.
Well, last week we had a gentleman on who's involved with the volunteer examination team here in Nashville, and we got to talking about the difficulty of the tests. And, of course, I had heard rumors that they were changing the general, and that the new general class license was going to be so much harder than the old one. Okay, well, the new one came out, and then I talked to Gordon West, and Gordon came on the show, and we did an interview with him, and he said, oh, no, he said, actually, he said, I think it's easier.
Oh.
He says, because they've removed a lot of things that are just kind of irrelevant, stuff you'd never use. And the question pool is different. It covers some newer items. But he said, I honestly think it's easier. I think where a lot of people get in trouble is they study outdated material. They may have the study guide from, say, 1995 or something, and they study that stuff.
You need to study that test that they have on QRZ.
QRZ has one, and so does EHAM. Both of those sites have those tests.
Well, I studied the QRZ one, and I didn't have no problems with that.
Well, you know, but the thing is that the folks get afraid of it, and they think they once again, and they'll use age as a factor and say, "Well, I'm just too old. I couldn't learn that stuff. I'm too old to learn it." You know. So I've heard this. Listen, I've heard it more than once. So anyhow. You've passed it, and I hats off to you. So now what? What direction
are you? Do you live in Nashville?
I live outside of Nashville. I live actually in a town called Lebanon, which is to the east of Nashville.
But, okay.
But I was going to say, what are your plans now? You've got your general class license, and you're working on 20 meters, and I can tell just from talking to you, you're enjoying it. What plans do you have? What do you want to do in ham radio now that you got the general ticket? And
my son was telling me I need a better antenna. So I guess we'll fix that up and get that going. And I think for my age and everything, it's a good hobby for me.
Now, on 20 meters, where do you wind up talking to? Tell me some of the stations you've worked. You don't necessarily have to remember call signs, but the cities and maybe some of the folks that you talk to.
Oh, Boston and New York. It seems like I'm Pennsylvania. Man, I've just got a line to that place. I don't know. It's always on there.
Okay.
I think I'm hamming more. I get my son over here all the time. I'm hamming more than he is.
Uh-huh. Do you ever work any DX? Do you work any long distance stations?
I heard London, but I'm not very clear. So Bob was telling me I need a little bit better antenna. He says then you won't have no problems, Mom. Well, I'm only using 100 watts.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, and that is we're right in the very, very bottom of the sunspot cycle. And, you know, it's like people, going through a drought, they pray for rain. Well, now hams are now praying for sunspots. Because as soon as we get a few sunspots, the activity of the bands will go sky high. You know, it'll be where they're wide open, where you see 10 meters open all day long, and you can work just about anywhere on 10 watts or 5 watts.
Oh, gee, that'll be great, won't it? I've seen it like that over the years, I mean.
But where we are
now. Other times my husband would say, oh, this band is terrible.
Yeah, and that's basically where we are right now, and it even bothers our shortwave broadcasting, where you have the big, huge stations running anywhere from 50 to 100,000 watts. And when they can't be heard,
that's bad.
Yeah, you know, you're not in for a picnic on the ham station. So you're just going to continue operating maybe the 20 meter band and making contact with people and having fun. Maybe working a little DX. And I guess I was just asking if you had any other ham radio plans. Do you have any idea what kind of antenna you're going to wind up getting?
Oh, Bob knows what he wants to get me. He's already told me, but I can't remember what it was.
Oh, boy. Well, once you get that antenna, it's probably a beam or a quad or something like that.
Oh, I have a tower, but that was my husband's, but I don't think I want to put that up. But, no, but he was saying that he was going to get me, I think it's from, he was going to get it from Martin something.
Well, Martin sells beams and he sells all kinds of things. He sells just about every conceivable kind of ham radio antenna. So
that's right.
Who knows what they got in mind? But anyways,
I don't know, but I know that Bob knows what he wants to give.
Well,
and his brother-in-law is a ham too. He came over and helped Bob put up my rig.
You're listening to QSO. And we'll be right back with our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN, right after this.
I'd like to talk to you for just a little bit about something that I discovered that made a major, major difference in my life and the way I felt. And that was a simple product called Metabolic. Now, I've taken vitamins all my life. I never felt that a vitamin I've ever taken has ever really done anything for me, except Metabolic. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation. And it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly, not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body. The supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. So if somebody says, this is time release. And no, let me tell you what. You want to feel the difference? You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous, because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. It causes what they call a free iron burden, and that interacts with chemicals such as vitamin C, uric acid, and they produce a lot of free radicals in your system, and you feel bad. Now, everybody today is under a lot of stress. I think we all are. There's no one that isn't under stress today. This is the formula you want because you will feel the difference. Absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, let me just say this. If you have diabetes, you understand the struggles that accompany this disease. You hear about a healthy lifestyle, weight management, healthy diet, and exercise. Now, studies are showing that proper vitamin supplementation, such as PMC's Metabolic and Veterans Formula, will give you a definite healthy lifestyle, far better than what you're experiencing right now. Now, Metabolic is the right choice because it helps get rid of the high glucose levels that have harmful effects on you from diabetes especially, as well as high blood pressure. High levels of alpha-lipoic acid decreases the possibilities of the formation of cataracts and sensory loss in hands and feet. Metabolic contains increased amounts of chromium picolinate that enhances insulin response. Metabolic contains increased levels of two forms of vitamin E that protects the outside and inside of each cell, and increased levels of L-carnitine supports a healthy nerve system. It's the right combination, all put together in one formula. Metabolic, if you're suffering from diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the Veterans Formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take Metabolic or Veterans Formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. We now rejoin our guest, Marie Esnault, KF4FGN. So now you're running just 100 watts. What kind of radio are you running?
ICOM.
You're running an ICOM. And what times of the day can folks look for you on
I think it's in the afternoon, around 2, 3 o'clock.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know there's going to be a lot of people that's going to be looking for you on 20 meters now.
And, oh, you think so?
Oh, I think so, yes, after this radio program. Your current call sign is KF4FGN, but you're changing the call, and when you change it, you're going to be
W4IJC.
I was going to say, you'll be assigned your
husband's call sign,
and that'll be a real, real good tribute, a real good memory, a memorial, an actual living memorial to him. That
really,
his call sign will still be on the air,
and his picture's in that ARRL handbook 95 on page 2.6.
You know, I will look for that, and in the meantime, you send us a picture if you've got one.
All right, now, yeah, but you didn't give me your address.
Well, when we're done talking here, I'll give you the email address where you can email it to me, or I'll give you a physical address where you can actually mail. Now, let's talk to young people for a little bit.
Okay.
Now, Marie, I women aren't supposed to tell their age. Okay.
I know, but I do.
But you are now, are you 82?
Well, I don't sound old either.
No, you don't. You really don't. You know, if I were single, I might make a pass at you over the telephone here.
I raised four boys.
So now are you 82 years old?
Yes. I had a birthday December the 15th.
And so you're now 82.
Right.
And for folks that are there saying, well, you know, I'm
too old.
I'm 60 years old. I'm too old to take that ham test. we're not buying that anymore. Nope. And folks that are wanting to have fun on ham radio and meet interesting people and talk to people, this is just a fine example of someone. And she tells me the if you study, the test is not extremely difficult. All you got to do is just study for it. Do you have any idea passed your mind, at least at this point, about possibly trying to take the extra class test?
I haven't even thought about that. I thought if I'm satisfied with what I have, I don't care. But unless maybe later on I'll see that I want it, but right now I don't.
Well, I think just like the general, it just requires some routine study. You set out, map out the time, and get it done. Well, not necessarily UHF or VHF, not 2 meters or 440, but have you operated any other of the HF bands at all to any extent?
No, I haven't much because my son's sort of been helping, guiding me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you listen to any of the 20-meter nets?
I hear them, but I don't get involved because I think, well, I better not say anything in there. I hear them.
all but they're there to get involved in. You have to.
They want me to say something, huh?
Well, yeah. You'll just listen and find the one you really like the best, and they'll. And I think that's what happens to a lot of folks. You know, you tune around on the ham radio, and you'll run across this net. And for some reason, it's just the combination of people. And
you think you're intruding on them, and you don't like to get in there involved.
Well, you know, and that's something, too, where a lot of guys feel that way. They say, well, you know, there's a CUSO in progress, and, you know, I don't want to get in between them. And, you know. So, I mean, and they think that. But really and truly, most ham radio operators that are sitting in a discussion with two or three people, most ham radio operators actually welcome people to come on board and join in the conversation. At least that's what I found. And, of course, on your end or on my end, it's a little intimidating. There's a bunch of guys in there talking, and I don't know who they are. So, I mean, I'd like to get in the middle of the conversation, but how do I do that? Because they don't know me, you know? And, you in the back of your mind, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to sign my call, and as soon as I get it out of my mouth, somebody's going to key the mic and say, this is W4XYZ, and hey, Lid, get off the frequency. You know, but yeah, I've never had that happen. So
I haven't had it yet either.
So I think really, I really think that for the most part, folks like more conversation. I think they really and truly.
I think that's what they were on there for, really.
Yeah, but
is conversation.
There's some frequencies that are clickish, and there's only a few people on there, and all that. But overall, the general trend is, you know, let's get as many people in this roundtable discussion, or get somebody in this group to participate. And you know, for the most part, I find hams friendly.
I do too.
Some people say, well, I've had a bad experience, and I suppose, you know, that all that is out there somewhere. But it hasn't been in my case. I haven't found too much of that at all. Now, you know, once in a while you run into, there's some hams out there that I think something happened, and they got around too much RF, and they fried their brain, and it kind of drained out their ear, you know. And you hear those guys on the air every once in a while. But there's not very many of those. I mean, you'll hear
them. No, I don't think so.
You'll hear a few of them from time to time, but not too many of them. So anyhow, I don't want to keep you on here too long and make you tired. But what are you? You're just going to continue operating? I was going to say, are you looking forward to anything coming up? Any events coming up? I know you're going to look forward to the Huntsville Ham Fest when it comes around again.
Well, I'll go to that. Yeah.
Well, what about Field Day?
Well, now, Field Day, that can be fun. It was fun for my son. I think the first time he started with the ham radio, they had a Field Day in his front yard.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing. We got kind of disenfranchised. We moved around quite a little bit, and we got disenfranchised from all the local clubs. So the year before last, we went to the field located adjacent to our property, and we went over our property line and took the generator out there and set up a tent, and we did Field Day, but we weren't that far from the house. We could walk to the refrigerator.
Well, that was good, yeah.
But
well, it was my son was just shocked because he didn't expect anything. He lives on Bell Mountain, and that's why I guess they picked that as a good Field Day special.
Now, where is Bell Mountain at?
It's South Huntsville.
Mm-hmm. All right, well.
It's right off the parkway.
We,
And it's before you get to the river.
I will say this. Now, we did the Field Day thing, just us, because we were sort of disenfranchised from the local club and whatnot, because we hadn't been in town very long. We'd moved out, and then we moved back. But I think it's always more fun when you have more people. If you can participate with a group, with a large group, especially people you know, I think I think it's a lot more fun that way as well. You know,
right.
I don't want to keep you too long. I really appreciate you spending the time with me here.
Well, I just hope it was that you enjoyed it and that you thought it was worthwhile.
Oh my goodness, this has been great. Once again, our guest is Marie Esnault. Am I saying that correct again? Make sure
that's
I'm saying
right. That's right.
Marie Esnault, and her current call sign is KF4FGN, but shortly she will become W4IJC. And that's her husband, her late husband's call. And it's obvious to see this man had been a real inspiration to her and an inspiration
to ham radio, period.
One of the leading cutting edge originators of the Oscar satellite. And we all can be very, very thankful for that, because Oscar satellite in ham radio has been, and for those that don't know, Oscar is orbiting satellite carrying amateur radio. That's what that acronym stands for. And it's fantastic when those satellites go over and you hear all these guys working them, and they're talking on these satellites, and it's just wonderful. And so much technology has come out of ham radio that's gone into the business sector. I don't think a lot of folks realize that the very cell phones that they have in their hands is a result of technology developed by ham operators. So we just got to keep plugging at it. We just got to keep creating new things and doing new stuff. Thank you so much, Marie. I really appreciate you coming on board with us and telling your story. And I hope to have you back again soon.
Glad. I hope you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. And when you come back the next time, I want you to tell me about all your DX contacts. By then, I know your log will be full.
I guess so.
Thank you so much.
I need your phone number or your address so I can have those grandkids of mine send you my picture.
All right. Well, I'm going to give that to you right now. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. This antenna features a specially designed lighter weight stand, and its unique slot design eliminates the need for a controller box and cable. The exact same performance as the famous TW2010 Adventurer. If you've heard you can't take it with you when you go, don't believe it. The Trans World TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. All other shipping will be through U.S. Postal Service at actual cost. Go to the website, take a look at the Trans World TW2010L Backpacker Antenna at transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Our guest today is Gordon West. And I must say that this gentleman has done a whole lot for the cause of ham radio. He's probably, I'm going to just say he's the world's foremost instructor as far as getting you a ham license or getting you a ticket. And I have a lot of admiration for this man because I happen to believe and I remain excited about the ham radio service. And how are you doing today, Gordon?
I'm fine, Ted. Thanks for having me on your show.
I would like to ask you, what motivated you into getting into the role of teacher with the wonderful CDs and books and things that you've put out that are so so easy to follow? What got you going on this track?
Probably my own interest in obtaining that first ham radio license and not having a local radio club to go to. So I thought, gee, I need some way of working through the different books that would keep me right on target and get me lined up to take that first entry exam, which back in the old days was, Ted, the novice ticket.
See, I remember getting the novice ticket, and I was in high school, and I couldn't wait to get home to fire up that single tube transmitter and get on and try to collect some QSL cards.
That's right, and you probably had your novice instructor. Remember, it was one person to give the novice test, so that instructor became your Elmer and your mentor, and he or she was usually there when you plugged in that first tube radio to give you a hand, a very shaky hand on CW getting on the air.
And I remember very well the first CW contact, because when I was on, everything was fine until the guy started transmitting back to me, and everything just ran together in my head. I was having such so nervous, had a difficult time. But, of course, that soon passes, you know, especially when you start getting two or three of those QSL cards in the mail. Tell me about your ham radio beginnings. How did you get into it? What sparked your interest in ham radio?
I was a shortwave listener and was actually taking part in two-way radio communications, a part of Class A Citizens Band, which back in the Class A day was on the current 460 megahertz band, 455, 460. And then Class D CB came along, and I had my first international crystal icebox CB radio, along with a pair of crystals, and I knew I wanted to do more because of the excitement of skywaves back in the peak of the solar cycle in 1957 and 58. So at that point, I went on to get my first novice call sign, and I transitioned from the excitement of CB radio over to ham radio.
Citizens Band radio was quite a bit different back then. Now, this was prior to 11 meters.
That's correct. Prior to 11 meters, they had a Class A CB radio service, and we had Vocaline transceivers, and you would change the frequency, Ted, by pushing with a pencil eraser these two plates, capacitive VFO, you might say. And it was short range, maybe 1 or 2 watts out, and it was designed for the utility of staying in touch with someone, not just as a hobby. And then Class D came along, and Class D immediately was embraced by the hobbyists, and I think at that point the FCC realized that they had a tiger by the tail, in that folks that came to Class D, 27 megahertz CB radio, were sort of like beginner hams, and many quality hams have risen up from the ranks of Class D Citizens Band.
And basically, really, that's where I came from. And there were some pretty strange rules, if you look at it now. I believe it was channels 1 through 8, and then channel 15 through 22. You could only speak to your own base or your own mobile or one of the units that you were licensed to. And then I think it was channels 9 through 14 that allowed you to talk to other licensed CBers, but you could only talk for 5 minutes
and then you had to observe a 5-minute silent period before you could say anything else, and you get only 4 watts and nothing over, I think it was 150 miles. Am I remembering that all correctly?
Oh, I think you do, and many of us abided by those rules, but we wanted to do more than 150 miles, and we wanted to talk to more than just family and friends. So that's where ham radio was the next logical stepping stone.
Of course, now ham radio existed all along, right alongside that service. Ham radio was always available. But, you know, I think that it was somewhat elusive to a lot of people. I think the Citizens Band made a good introduction.
It did. Ham radio was like that secret radio service that you would ultimately be invited to join the secret ranks and become a ham operator. And to become a ham, you first had to start with the novice license, and that required both a code test as well as a written test, and that required you finding another ham that would send away for your test paperwork. So it was a big step to join ham radio, and it was an easy step to become a licensed CB radio operator, because at the very beginning, as you recall, Ted, we had to have a call sign with our CB station, 11W2534. You remember those days.
I remember those call signs. However, at my entry point, I think they were all using things like KPN, KRN, KNN. They were using those kind of letters followed by four numbers.
That's correct. That was the second phase of call signs. The very first phase was the FCC districts, and 11W was Southern California, 9W, I think, was Chicago, and 7W was Florida, but now they went to KMX and KMY, and then they finally just abolished call letters altogether.
I remember my first taste of ham radio. I was in Detroit, Michigan, and I went to a ham's house. My mom had taken me there. He went to church with my aunt, I think, and I walked in, and his name was Nelson Cosby. He was from Dearborn, Michigan. And he had a Heathkit Marauder and an SX-101 and a homebrew pair of 813s. I'll never forget this station, because when he turned on the amplifier, there was a big light bulb that came on and lit up brightly, and then it kind of dimmed out. Of course, we all know now that was in the power supply. But to me, it was like witchcraft. I didn't know what was going on. And he had mercury vapor tubes that had that romantic purple hue to them as he talked. He had a beam, and the only contact he made was a gentleman in Denver, Colorado. I just remember him talking to Denver, and when I saw this guy talking to Denver, Colorado, sitting in his basement radio shack, I was hooked. There was nothing else I could do. I became paralyzed by the hobby from that point on. Did you have a similar circumstance at all?
Oh, I did. With CB radio, I had a shortwave receiver, a good old Hallicrafters S-38E, and that radio was sort of a shocker, you might say, in that you never wanted to operate it in a wet environment, because one side of the chassis was hot. So if you completed the circuit, you knew you had a Hallicrafters S-38E. But anyway, that allowed me to tune in to the 40-meter ham bands and listen to some of the CW, as well as just swinging over to single sideband, as well as double sideband AM. And hearing those folks talk Skywave, that was exciting. That's what hooked me, Skywave.
Yeah, I had an old Gruno, and back then, of course, it was AM days. And you would tune into the hams talking on 40 meters, because that little receiver did really well. And it was so fascinating to hear these guys just sit there and rag chew. And they would talk about everything under the sun, and every once in a while one would break in and he'd be in a different city. And it was like being caught away into another world, is what it was like. It was a doorway, you know, actually to the entire world. And as a kid, boy, I mean, your imagination would just go wild, because you could picture what this guy looked like and where he was sitting and all that. You know, it just was really a theater of the mind. So now, when you first got your ham license, you first got your novice ticket. Tell me a little bit about that. How did that work out?
It worked out well. I went over to a fella's TV repair shop, and he gave me the novice test and gave me a reasonable code test. He sent me a transmission. I can't quite remember every word, but it had words like volcano to be sure and use the letter V and the L and the C, which are a little bit more complex than some of the other ones. But I copied that 5 words a minute, and he sent away for my call sign, and boy, it seemed like the longest wait. I think it was about 30 days to finally get my call letters from the Federal Communications Commission. And once I had the call letters, I was on with a Heath kit, HW101, and pounding away on the CW bands as a novice operator with other operators all over the country.
Well, did you ever get one of the worked all state certificates and all those sort of things?
You know, some folks were really into working all states and working all countries and things like that. And while I enjoyed exchanging QSL cards, I never really got into the competition side of thing. If I did, I would have probably been hooked. But no, I just enjoyed working as many new places as possible and had a great time talking with old friends via CW. So never really went into trying to earn the worked all states.
Well, I think that's the way I was. My problem was is I was too excited just about making contacts and collecting cards to be able to concentrate on trying to work all states, because I'd hear a station in there, and NECQ to me was fascinating, because I figured that's another postcard for the wall, if that makes any sense.
That's right.
So the novice ticket, you know, let me ask you this. I mean, today we live in an age of, boy, we have some technology that's unbelievable right now. And I see all of these things. You know, I'm wondering, do you think we've lost anything? Have we kind of lost a little bit of that magic of the novice license and the little low-power tube transmitters and that sort of thing? How do you see that?
Well, I think the magic that is no longer magic but easily seen is wireless. And when we first started off with radio, and for those listeners to your show right now, hearing us via skywaves and hearing a little bit of the skywaves fading in and out, that is magic. But so many folks have grown accustomed to wireless that they're no longer going to be a candidate for our ham radio magic, because they really don't care about how the signal goes from one cell site to the other, or from their Wi-Fi to their local router. To me, that is magic. I always get a kick out of stuff that goes wireless. But for today's generation, we've probably lost half of our potential ham radio customers because they're not turned on with getting a signal that is coming in and out of the ionosphere via this magic of propagation without having to use repeaters.
Well, you know, I think the thing of it is that you know, we have gotten computers. I mean, you can sit down with an instant message, you can talk on it, you can do all these things, but you're dependent on that infrastructure. I mean, you've got to be connected to a connection that you're paying dearly for, and you're always at their mercy, because at any moment, you know, that connection can go away, and then you sit there and you don't have anything. You are dead in the water.
That is true, but we have grown so accustomed to turning on the light switch and the lights come on, or grabbing the cell phone or the BlackBerry or the Q phone, that we just take for granted it's always going to be there. And as our communication systems for commercial communications become more and more sophisticated, we just take it for granted. But it's the hams that look into the crystal ball and see that when the big hurricane comes, or here in Southern California, the big earthquake, those comm systems could fail. And then, of course, we're back to truly wireless without the need of repeaters. And that's where ham radio operators will shine, if we have any operators left still shining.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Gordon West right after this.
You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest, Gordon West, right after this. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy?
The name to think about and remember is Tux-Support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-Support.com. They provide solutions for small to medium-sized businesses and organizations, from web design and web hosting to e-commerce and custom solutions. Tux-Support has it all. Their tools are simple and easy to use, with your secretary being your webmaster. You, the client, will be in control of your own website without any webmaster experience. Tux-Support.com is the website. You need to go to the website and check it out. Give them a call. They have a toll-free telephone number listed up there, 877-511-8890 or 877-511-TUXO. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website.
And now back to our guest, Gordon West on QSO.
We're back, and our guest is Gordon West. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, your beginnings and getting into ham radio, but you're involved in some other things, and I'm going to talk about Gordon West just a little bit. Tell me a little bit about this adventure, I'm going to call it, that you're going to be doing here within the next few weeks. You're doing some missionary work, and I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Well, as you know, there are still many areas of the world, Ted, that have no infrastructure of modern communications. And ham radio for sailors out at sea certainly is one of the big turn-ons, because they can stay in touch via ham radio email with loved ones back home without having to rely on satellites. Certainly, satellites, as we get more and more satellites up, will ultimately lead us to a worldwide cell phone that will work anywhere, including in the middle of the ocean. But right now, except for Iridium, there is no cell phone that literally works the world way out in the middle of nowhere. And two-way radio is still relied on by the doctors and nurses on some remote islands called the Line Islands. They're at 1 degree north, due south of Hawaii, right on the equator, and I'm specifically going back to Kiritimati Island, known as Christmas Island, and then via a small boat working north to Fanning Island and further north to Washington Island. These outposts interconnected via marine VHF radio and the country's high-frequency 7.4 megahertz communication system. And so I'll be there for 2.5 weeks playing almost ham radio, but marine VHF and commercial radio on high frequency to bounce signals off the ionosphere or within the troposphere to keep these islands connected to the outside world and among themselves.
Now, how does all that infrastructure work? I mean, how does that physically take place?
We first had to get permission from the host country of Christmas Island to be able to support these communications, and they gave us permission to use different radio frequencies. We were fortunate that marine VHF carries very well at 156 megahertz down near the equator via tropoducting over a couple of hundred miles. And as your listeners, Ted, know, VHF propagation normally goes 20 to 30 miles, but over the warm seawater, it goes literally 100 miles plus. Propagation via high frequency will be on 7.4 megahertz, and our propagation there will reach out 300 to 400 miles. And being a ham radio operator, it's much like the 40-meter ham band when it comes to propagation. So the equipment is all transistorized, everything running on solar panels, and everything tied into storage batteries that we're bringing down via boat to these islands.
And what type of, now, in this situation, what type of communication is exchanged over this network that you're working on?
They have one and only hospital at Christmas Island that is frequented by mariners aboard boats passing through the island chain to get to Tonga. And this is the only rest stop, you might say, on the equator for any medical help. They have one doctor, and they have a good cadre of nurses, well-trained nurses, that will treat both visitors as well as their own islanders for just about anything with just rudimentary equipment. X-ray? No, I don't think so, because there's very little alternating current on the island, because these were the same islands involved in the H-bomb tests in the 50s, so everything was buried underground, and of course, seawater has now seeped into the atoll's ground level and has shorted those all out. So pretty much everything is off solar panels and batteries to keep the hospital in touch with the four or five clinics on Christmas Island, the five clinics on Fanning Island, and as I'll soon find out next week, the three or four clinics left on Washington Island.
How did you get involved in this project to start with? This is this sounds like it's a real cool thing to get involved in.
Well, again, as many of us in the communications field will say, ham radio. I had a ham radio friend that was talking to me about what frequencies would be good for this and that, and then I found out he was volunteering his time to bring over medications and was going to bring CB radios on 27 megahertz because that's what they had used in the past. And I said, gee, I think we can probably do better than Citizens Band, and CB might not even be allowed in the Christmas Island chain. So we finally got permission to operate sideband and VHF, but it was a fellow ham that invited me to join in this all-volunteer effort.
That's fantastic. That's really, really cool. I commend you. And this is the kind of thing, folks, that that makes a great name for amateur radio and makes us good neighbors, not just domestically here in the United States, but all over the world. And that's what gives us, I guess I want to say, that creates the respect that people have for ham radio. You know, I don't want to jump the gun, but I would like to ask you, because you teach these classes in on a CD and whatnot. You have a school. Tell me a little bit about the school. Now, how does that work? Now, I've heard about the Gordon West School. So tell me about the Gordon West School.
I started offering ham radio classes about the same time that I came out with some training materials, loose leaf, held together by a comb binding that my wife Susie, also a ham N6GLF, she and I would put these together on our dining room table and issue them to fellow folks back in the 60s wanting to get their ham ticket. And I thought, you know, maybe the local junior colleges would like to offer some ham radio courses. So I went through the college system and found out that they wanted ham instruction. So started teaching ham radio classes through the local community college system, and then started offering upgrade classes on our own. And then we started bringing out some good quality books by a book publisher that recognized the need for additional training materials. And it ended up as Gordon West Radio School. And my wife and I are the sole proprietors. And we have literally thousands of hams that we have trained throughout the world that we're so proud of, because more than just getting a license, Ted, they're on the air contributing to the hobby and service of ham radio.
Well, you know, that's another thing I wanted to bring up to you, and that is, you know, you are really, really big on being an Elmer and advocating that people become Elmers. Why is that so important? Why do you see Elmers as being something that people should be getting? Let's define what an Elmer is, and then let's talk about what it takes to become one.
Well, that's a great question that you ask, and I know your readers who are shortwave listeners tuning in to us when we obtain our ham radio license in the years past, we would take it in front of a single ham who would become our Elmer, and an Elmer is a name for someone that teaches someone all about a specific hobby and brings them up through the ranks. Now the examination system, which is running very well, is run by three ham radio operators that have either the general or the extra class license. They are credentialed by the volunteer examination system as volunteer examiners. They're accredited, and these examiners offer free of charge, other than the $14 test fee that some charge to make up expenses, tests once a week, once a month. But they have so many applicants that they really don't have a chance to take one or two of the applicants under their wings. So someone that's been studying my materials or the American Radio Relay League fine materials, they go to the test, they take the test, they pass the test, and they say, congratulations, welcome to ham radio. And they stumble out of the test room and about a week later end up with call sign. And the next question is, what's next? And here's the thing is, they don't know. Unless they have an Elmer that will take them by the hand saying, well, you should first get started on maybe 2 meters and 440 megahertz and meet some of the local hams and join a ham radio club, they're lost. They're licensed, but they're lost. So the importance of an Elmer is to be right there saying, okay, you've got step one, that's the license. Now let's talk about getting you on the air.
Well, you know, and you know, procedures scared me when I first got into ham radio. I was afraid of the procedures. I was afraid of traffic handling. Talk a little bit about that, because it's not that complex, but is that not a hurdle? Does that not frighten some people?
You know, I think it does, procedures of going on the air. So what we do in our classes, and these are usually weekend classes, is we have the students home study ahead of time with home study materials that we make available to them. Then they take the class, and within the class we have operating equipment where they learn to speak over the microphone and so on. But you know, once they pass the test and they know how to talk on the mic, they have a huge hurdle, and that hurdle is going to the ham store or the ham catalogs, ordering a piece of equipment, and then figuring out how to start programming it and how to put in the popular repeater channels, where they don't know what's popular in their area unless they had an Elmer right there to help them pre-program the radio.
So in other words, it's no longer just dip the plate and peek the grid.
No longer dip the plate, peak the grid, up the load, and watch the SWR. Nope, now it is put the antenna up, dual band antenna on the vehicle or a nice fiberglass dual band on the rooftop, but then figuring out how to program the output, what the input separation is, what the subaudible tone is, all of these are important steps. And worse yet is knowing what output to tune in and what is the popular repeater for their specific area. Many ham stores, almost all ham stores, will sell the equipment and let the student walk out of the store with this brand new piece of equipment, dual band radio under their arm. But they failed to say, let me put in a couple of channels that I know will get you turned on to some of the local clubs than their meeting time. So that's my big push right now is, let's do more for these brand new licensed hams. Let's not just sell them a piece of gear and saying, good luck, but rather help them pre-program it before they leave that facility and get them on the air.
Well, you know, I think it goes back to the simple thing of programming a VCR years ago. You know, I had to have my kids do it. And I'm looking right now at a dual band rig sitting on my desk that's got cross repeat on it. It's a 2 meter 440, and I've had it on a couple times, and I've managed to get into a QSO or hit a repeater with the thing, but I still haven't got the slightest idea how to take advantage of all the features of this radio. And it's pretty complex. I mean, when you think about how it'll do, now the worst thing in the world is I have a little THF6 that my son gave me, and that's a fantastic little radio. It's three bands, but, you know, I need to carry a little pocket guide or something with me in order to find my way around. But you know what? He gets on the thing, and it scans, finds the PL tones. He knows exactly what's going on, and I sit there, and I just stare dumbfounded, thinking to myself, when am I going to learn all this stuff?
Well, that's a good point. You know, kids, we teach free kids classes each summer. Kids really pick this stuff up. But again, here in Southern California, we've got so many different repeaters to choose from. We know which one kids will like. In fact, we have some that have kids' nets in the evenings on the weekends. So those are the ones that we would like kids to start listening to so they can really jump in with both feet. But unless they know the frequency, the offset, the subaudible tone, the time for the nets, when to talk, a little procedure, they're not going to fit in well. So that's the importance of a ham radio Elmer after the student has their brand new call sign.
Sounds like I'm still needing an Elmer. What do you think?
Well, you know, when I give this talk at different ham fests, you see some of these hams in the front row going, oh, yeah, you just must be dumb. You don't know how to program a radio. So I take out a current radio and I say, oh, by the way, would you mind putting in 146.82-600 with the 103.5 PL? And they go, well, So even the old-timers, even those that think they know every radio, may have a hard time because each radio programs differently. And if the hams can't figure it out that have been around for years, think about the brand-new ham that just passed the test, walked home with their brand-new Kenwood Yaesu ICOM or a Linko or Radio Shack radio. They don't know what frequency to program because nobody has put their arm around them and saying, welcome to ham radio. Let me help you program the radio.
That's a thing I want to say that everybody ought to take note. Find some new ham. If you're already a ham, find somebody and extend your hand because that's what made ham radio what it is today. Or had that benevolent camaraderie, whatever you want to call it. It's almost like a fellowship. And I'm thinking of a word, but I can't come up with it. That has made ham radio and given it the reputation that it has. Fraternity, that's the word I want, fraternity. Let's take a break. We'll be back with Gordon West right after this.
You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest, Gordon West, right after this. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. Brand new from Transworld Antennas, it's the 4040, the 40-meter monoband antenna. Now, you heard us talking about this a little earlier. That's the Transworld Adventurer 4040 monoband antenna. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable stealth package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installations, and the 4040 switching array box covers the entire 40-meter band 7.0 to 7.3 without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Now listen to this. If you already own a TW2010 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Transworld Adventurer 4040 array box in center section only right now, only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Transworld Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Transworld Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Transworld Antennas. take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040.
We're back, and our guest is Gordon West. I would have to say the world's foremost instructor when it comes to amateur radio. You talked about local clubs. There's also the American Radio Relay League, the ARRL.
That is our largest and one most only nonprofit club for ham radio.
Tell me a little bit about your affiliation with the league, because I know you're active in supporting the league and being part of what they do.
The American Radio Relay League publishes terrific ham radio books. In fact, that's how I learn regularly about new modes, is to read all of the new books that they present. The ARRL is the nation's number one and truly the only nonprofit organization with representatives in Washington to help fight for our ham radio rights to have a nice, clean airwaves to tune in. And I know your shortwave listeners will appreciate all that the ARRL has done to minimize the effects of broadband over power line, a huge noise-generating system that literally puts computer noise directly on the power lines that radiate to their antennas. ARRL does so much for ham radio. So what my relationship with them is to be a good friend and encourage all of my students to join the American Radio Relay League, and also to be one of their registered instructors, and just an ambassador for ham radio, trying to work as closely as possible with the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut.
You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest, Gordon West, right after this. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. Brand new from Transworld Antennas, it's the 4040, the 40-meter monoband antenna. Now, you heard us talking about this a little earlier. That's the Transworld Adventurer 4040 monoband antenna. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable stealth package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installations, and the 4040 switching array box covers the entire 40-meter band 7.0 to 7.3 without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Now listen to this. If you already own a TW2010 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Transworld Adventurer 4040 array box in center section only, right now only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Transworld Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Transworld Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Transworld Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040.
Of course, there's their station, W1AW, and they still do code practice and bulletins, and it's always fascinating every time you hear that call sign coming across.
Oh, it is, and my heart always beats a little faster realizing this is coming from the number one radio station in the country, W1AW, for all that the league does and their outreaching, especially into space, to get kids more involved into the space program via ham radio in the International Space Station and aboard most of the space shuttle missions. So ARRL, certainly our organization to represent us as ham radio operators throughout the world.
You know, I want to talk a minute or two here about the training. And let's say I've got a shortwave listener right now, which I know I do. I know you're there. And you're saying, you know, I've been putting it off, but I really would love to get into ham radio. Let's talk about the first entry-level license. And tell us a little bit about your study material that they could get their hands on that would make life a lot easier.
The first license is now the technician class, Element 2, and that requires studying a pool of about 400 questions and answers with a multiple choice 35 exam test at the conclusion of your study. And the technician class license is a powerful one, allowing operators all access to frequencies above 50 megahertz and voice on a small portion of the 28 megahertz 10-meter band, as well as CW on 15, 40, and 75 meters, even though there is no CW Morse code test. So the tech license, called technician, is what gives brand-new operators for ham radio onto the airways, working right alongside with those that may have the extra or the general license. And the tech license just requires studying the questions and then going to take the 35-question multiple-choice exam, where you could miss up to 9 out of those 35 questions. But the biggest problem are not the questions and answers and learning them. It's just knuckling down, taking the study, and motivating yourself to ultimately show up at the examination center to take your relatively straightforward test. $14 is the test fee, and some don't even charge that. And then finding a local ham club to begin operating. So my programs are motivational, where I have audio CDs that play the different sounds of ham radio, especially to the International Space Station and working meteors and talking ionospheric skip on 6 meters. So I'm sort of motivational. Come on, you can do it. You can get that license.
Where can these study materials be found? Where can we look on the web and find these things?
All of our ham radio materials are now sold by ham radio dealers. Radio Shack, which used to sell all of ham radio materials, including the league materials, has pretty well concentrated on cellular materials now, not ham radio. But they can go to our main dealer distributor or any one of our dealers, and our main distributor is at www.w5yi.org. That's Whiskey 5 Yankee India, W5YI.org. That's a call sign of the founder of the W5YI organization, and see all of the different materials that are available.
Now, you've got the study guide for the technician, but you also have, for those hams that want to upgrade, you've got the general class study guide. You also have the extra class study guide. And these CDs, I can tell you firsthand, are just wonderful. They really are. They're humorous. You chuckle. You learn. And they're entertaining, for heaven's sakes. They really are. They're not just, it isn't just sitting there drilling away at a book. And for people like me, it's kind of cool to listen to the CD and follow along in the book at the same time, because they go hand in hand. They're just almost, they're replicated, I guess. Are they not?
Well, they are, and I appreciate hearing that. What we've done in our books is we reorganize the questions so that they're in a logical learning order. And instead of subjecting the brand new applicant to volts and watts and amps and ohms, we give them the lure of ham radio and propagation. So we've moved some of the questions around, and the CDs then play them the different sounds of tropospheric ducting and ionospheric skip and low-band ground wave propagation. So they hear this live and direct. And I do these CDs. You'll appreciate this, Ted, and many of your listeners at their shortwave stations probably have a little recording set up at their house. And that's, we do them right here at the house. Susie and I block off the phones, bring down the Heil microphones, and begin recording them. And I've got all the radio sounds right here, plus all sorts of audio files that we mix in. And it's a homebrew job, but then it's professionally digitized by a CD maker. And folks get a big kick out of them because I enjoy poking a little bit of fun at some of the hilarious sounds that many times will intercept over the airwaves.
We're just about out of time, but there was two things that I wanted to cover. The first thing was, is the technician license does indeed give the operator some CW privileges on HF. That is the case then.
Yes, that is relatively new, but the new technician class licensee is encouraged to try CW on 10 meters, 15 meters, 40 meters, and 75 meters. They've reallocated some of the areas for the CW, and there's a lot of tech operators who have never passed a CW test but are doing great on Morse code dots and dashes down on high frequency.
The other question was, I was going to ask you about the upgrade to the general test. I understand that that question pool is either going to change or just recently changed. Which is it, and how much more difficult is the general class going to be?
It actually got easier. It changed last July 1st, and they took out some of the questions that people would stumble on because the answers were sort of nebulous. They added some more up-to-date questions on digital. So the general is no harder to pass than in the years past. And since there's no code test, no 5-word, no 13-word-a-minute code test associated with the general, the upgrade is study 400-plus questions, get at least no more than 9 wrong, and you pass the multiple-choice written exam. And you get immediate privileges when you upgrade from tech to general.
Is there any changes coming up in the extra class pool that you know of?
Yes, the extra is going to change next year, 2008, July 1st. The extra is going to be refined. Right now, it's a conglomeration of the old advanced, the old extra. There's some general stuff in there. It's really a mismatch of a ton of questions, 800 plus, of which 50 are on the test. Right now, a question pool committee, including myself, are working on upgrading those questions to make much more sense. So I don't think the test will be any harder, but we won't know until we see the new completed pool early next year.
Well, very good. Now, your website for Gordon West Schools is what? Now, let's have that address real quick.
Just all one big long word, gordonwestradioschool.org. And Susie and I, we're always here, and we're one of the only schools. In fact, I think we're the only ham school in the country, but it's just a mom-and-pop organization, and my phone number, the same number you called me on, is published in all of our books and given out on the CDs. So we tell our students, hey, you got a question, or if you just passed your test and you need an Elmer, give me a phone call and I'll talk directly with you during daylight hours here in California. And every day we get calls from our readers or those listening to us like you do, and it makes life very much fun for ham radio.
Okay, we have GordonWestSchools.com.
Almost, GordonWestRadioSchool.com,
okay,
all one word.
Make that right. Gordon West Radio School, or schools, plural, which is it now?
School.org, O-R-G.
Okay, so it's GordonWestRadioSchool.org. We want to make sure we got this URL correct. GordonWestRadioSchool.org. And then the URL for your distributor that does is the W5...
yi.org. www.w5yi.org.
Just want to encourage folks, this is a good way, an enjoyable way to get into the hobby or upgrade. Mr. West, thank you so much for being on board with us. We're out of time, and we want to have you back sometime real soon.
Thanks again, Ted, and listeners out there, thank you for listening.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you.
We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. That's going to do it for this edition of QSO. We want to thank you very much for listening. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station, for QSO.